and welcome to the RDM podcast. My name is Rabbi Daniel Malinga. We are back for part two, discussing near-death experiences. We had an interesting discussion the previous episode, and now we're back with someone else. I'm going to introduce my guest, but before I do so, we're going to take a look at a clip that is going to set a foundation, a preamble, before we dive in. Watch this.
In the year 2012, I was home. I was at home in Barara, in my room alone, sleeping. And I was in the process of waking up. And then my spirit left the body. When it left the body, I was observing it, like, lying down on bed. And then while I was still confused, I found myself in heaven. And the first thing I saw was the staircase. It was white with some gold in it. I saw there were three angels smiling at me. And that's when it dawned on me that I had died. So I told them I wanted to see God. One of them smiled and led me somewhere. It was a very glorious place, and like it was full of glory and light. And though it wasn't like a throne room, like God seated somewhere, but I just felt the presence of God in that place. I could see my auntie in the room back home. So she came in and she was crying when she saw my body there lying. Like, she came and shook me. I was a bit stiff. So she went out and called others, like, to come and see what had happened. I was seeing those things while I was at the same time I was in heaven. So I'm in heaven, talking to God. I was telling him, I've just gotten born again. I want to serve you. I need more years on earth. I need to live. I need to serve you. Because I feel like I haven't lived up to that. I feel like I'm going to die young, and I don't want it. I was seeing the events that were taking place in my room. My cousin saw my eyes, and I no longer had the pupil. They had gone up, and it was just white. So they took me to a clinic in Barara. While we were on the way, they called two prominent pastors in Barara to come and pray for me, because I wasn't sick. I was just sleeping, and that happened. Like, I had no issue. So when they reached hospital, I was told that the nurses told them that they couldn't take in a corpse. Like, I was already dead. Ever since that experience, my eyes have been, like, opened to the spirit world.
We have set a preamble. I'm going to introduce the people in the studio with me before we go deep into what we're going to discuss, and then we'll see how far we can go. On my left is my co-host, Afimani McLean Moneybags. You're very welcome.
Thank you, sir.
On his far left is Gloria Mahoro Waliemera. She's a lecturer.
Yeah.
Yes. Gloria, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi.
And she's the focus of our session today. She's going to share with us her experience. And on my right, we're welcoming back the doctor from his busy schedule, Dr. George Semakaje. You're very welcome.
Esekamanje.
Esekamanje. I need to remember that name. Okay. You're very welcome, sir. He's also a man of God. He's going to give us a lot of details and info into what we have to discuss today. Gentlemen and lady, we have just watched something very brief on a lady who had an experience where, unlike our previous guest in the previous episode, she went to sleep. She was alone in a room and she felt the body getting cold and she died. She left her body, found herself somewhere. Okay? Now, we're going to go deeper into that because her eyes, according to the story, her eyes were the pupils could not be seen. They had become white. Eh? Doctor, you know this story because this happens to be your wife.
Eh? Okay, interesting.
Yes. So, is that clinical death?
I guess for some patients, when they die, I can't say, well, you know, the movement of the eyes and the reflexes are controlled by the brainstem. So let's imagine the eye will roll up and down. And then as it's rolling up,
it stays there.
It kicks in. That's why for some people, you find it's still white and black. Then for other people, if it's rolled back, it's basically just white. So when does the reflex die out? That will determine.
Okay. So you're saying...
But if you check the pupil, if she was particular about the pupil, if the pupils are no longer directing to light, then... Yeah,
then she's dead.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. And given the fact that from the story... They took the body to a clinic and they refused the body because
they must have checked
and they refused and they said we don't take corpses. Okay, do you have anything to add to this before we go into this, because we're going to discuss it in
just that it's an interesting introduction to today's session.
Okay. We're continuing with the story. We're going to be focusing on near-death experiences but also out-of-body experiences, and an out-of-body experience is different from a near-death experience. What is an out-of-body experience, if we may, before we go to Gloria?
An out-of-body experience. Okay, I'll try to recap it from the near-death experience.
Right.
In the near-death experience, like, I'll just speak from the narration. She was able to get out of her body and see her own body. So that essence of someone being out of their body and being able to still observe the environment and stuff like that, or even probably get caught up anywhere else, it's what they call an out-of-body experience.
So you're saying that it is possible for... A near-death experience, an out-of-body experience can happen in a near-death experience.
Correct.
Yes.
But it's possible to have an out-of-body experience without having a
near-death experience.
Death experience. So, for example, astral projection is an out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
Astral projection, for all purposes, is actually intentional. But there are out-of-body experiences that are not intentional. They happen. The Lord can pick up someone. And we're going to touch on those as we go along. So, Gloria, I'm going to ask you, you had an experience. You're the center of our story today. Please, go ahead and give us your experience and what you learned from it.
Okay. So, I have three children, for starters. With the first one, we had some strange experiences there, but... on the second is when this experience actually happened, the center of this discussion. But the third child also had some few experiences there, mostly to do with his health, nothing so spiritual.
First, take us to the first one, briefly. What happened? What was strange about that birth and conception?
Okay, for the first one, there were a lot of dream encounters. One in particular that stands out for me is around the 6th, 7th month, when the belly is a bit big, I would have dreams where like a snake is coming with its two fangs and bites all the way into the baby's foot, the heel of the foot. Like the other scripture that he shall, what is the scripture in full? But it has to do with the serpent biting the heel of woman's son. So I would look at all these things and I realized there's something weird going on with this pregnancy. Then in between there were a lot of snakes, dreaming a lot of snakes. And then I chose a name. There's a name that I actually liked to name this child, even though the father is more of, geared towards African names. Me, I chose Karl, K-A-R-L. Now, when I looked up what Karl meant, it meant a free man.
Interesting, so, huh?
It meant a free man. I think it came from the days of slavery in Europe. So I liked the name. I just liked German things, basically, including the Mercedes.
Okay.
So I went with that name. And in the hospital, strangely enough, after a long, not a very long period, like from 7 a.m. to around midday, I had this very intense labor, whereby I don't even want to go there. It felt like they were pounding a hammer on top of your head, and then the pain just goes through the whole body. Like,
and this was your first child, eh?
This is the first child.
So, doctor, that's consistent with first birth experience.
What is too consistent? Okay, everyone pregnancy is different. We always say each pregnancy is different. The most consistent thing with a first pregnancy is what we always know is, the fear, I will say, you understand, for mothers, most especially, well, I may not be at your home with you and the child, but I will judge from what I see in the hospital. It's always more painful than the other and stuff like that. Nevertheless, when you interact with different mothers, they will tell you, so the experiences she's giving, that a speech and stuff like that, could have just been consistent with that child.
And it's interesting that most of the pregnant women always, okay, most of them have these dreams of snakes and dark things coming for their children. Maki, do you think there's a specific reason for that?
I think I'll just borrow a leaf from one of your very summons. How the devil just has a vendetta
against
women. but I'm interested in hearing the depth of where she's going with the story.
Okay, you know, go ahead.
So where are we? We are at the hospital and we're having labor. So the labor is so intense, and they go ahead to put that drip, that inducing thing, to fasten up the labor. They had checked the baby. The baby was fine in the morning hours, but towards the midday hour, around 1, 2 there, they put the inducing drug. That just made the pain a lot worse. Like you wanted to scream, but it can't work. To scratch, it can't work. All the time I was just, Jesus, 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 Jesus. In the midst of that feeling, of course, a little betrayed. Like, really, Jesus? How many times have I called you? Like you said, we shall call on your name and we shall be saved. Kind of save me here. So I called Jesus, I called Jesus non-stop. Until hours into the inducing medicine, a doctor comes and checks and finds the color of a liquid is almost like Rabbi's shirt, that dark green.
Doctor, what is she talking about?
I see him looking at me.
Yes.
Of course.
It's the reason you're here.
I imagine. What if I forgot?
Okay.
Okay, yeah, we basically call it meconium. Of course, there's usually the fetal liquid, but usually when the baby excretes feces from within during the delivery, and that mixes with all these other fluids and stuff like that, it's not a good thing. So it's usually a marker of fetal distress and so many other things, fetal distress, obstruction and stuff like that. But once we see that, that's usually an indication for probably going for an emergency, because the more they means mixing with the fluids that are entering the airborne and stuff like that, they are at a threat of getting what we call neonatal sepsis when they are born. Sickness, okay.
Okay. Thank you, doctor.
So that's exactly what they say, that there's fetal distress. So they rolled me to theater like as soon as possible. We practically ran to theater. And I remember the theater was occupied at that time. So they had to put that anesthetic, of the back while we were in the corridor. Now when they put it, remember I was here shouting because of the intense pain. When they put the first one, all the pain just faded, like faded, all of it gone. I'm like, guys, what were you waiting for? Should have done this earlier. Because it's now like 4. I've been in this situation since 7. At around midday it intensified. Really? You should have done this earlier. So we enter the theater. They do the operation within a few minutes, just like 12, 15 minutes while they're talking to you, of course. But when they got the baby out, he delayed a bit to make a sound, and then he had a dark green color, pigment. I remember the doctors making a joke about it.
Doctor, what is that?
It must have been the meconium. Okay. I thought it mixes up with the whole thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they checked him up and found the child is fine, he's healthy. They said they had detected it quickly.
Mm.
But fast forward to the night, the first night with the child, at around 3 a.m., yeah, I'm sleeping in the room, the recovery room, with the person I'd gone with. She was my maid at the time. She was a spiritual girl. So we used to share dreams, what... So at that point, we all wake up at the same time. The baby is screaming. I'm having a dream. She's having a dream. I'm having a dream when, like, at the hospital, there's a white man. No offense to the whites. A white man. He's holding a walking stick. He's a bit old. He was one-legged, like he was lame. Mm. And he has a string of babies, newborns, following him into the bush near the hospital. And then the girl is having a dream that a gorilla has snatched the baby.
Mm.
So we all wake up like in a state of what's going on here. Start binding, of course, living in your authority, you know. And the baby survived and we were discharged in 3 days. And then like that first week of the baby's life, I had no milk. Many people who go through C-sections somehow lack milk. I don't know why, but I didn't have the milk and I didn't know. That's the key issue. I didn't know because this is a first time baby. It was around Christmas time. That child was born on December 28th. So many people who could have advised us were off to the villages, what? So we went with our baby home with nobody who is experienced to look after the baby. So a few days at home, like after Christmas, a cousin of mine comes and he's like, no, there's something wrong with this baby. This baby is too thin. And the baby had a temperature. We had taken him to the hospital, but they said, no, let the feeding improve. What? The baby will be fine. And at the hospital where he was born, they had strictly warned us not to give him anything else apart from breast milk. Because around that time, there were many fake formulas on the market and they had killed some babies. So we didn't give him anything else. He's like, no, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. She already had 3 kids. She called my mom. She basically created an alarm around the family and they had to come and see what's up with this baby. So we had to run back to the hospital where he was born. Pete looked at us and he's like, you feed that baby. I want to observe you. He observed us feeding that baby for like 2 hours. And then he said, I think it's milk that's lacking. Go and buy him formula now from our own pharmacy. So we rushed and bought him formula. But even around that week, we were told this baby was about to die because he lost 1 kilogram from the birth weight.
What was the birth weight?
The birth weight was 3.4. And now he was at 2.4.
Okay, yet it's supposed to go the other way around, eh?
Yes, then the Freeman issue. Remember I told you that I used to call him Carl, even through the pregnancy. Mm. When he was born, the doctors told us he had a cord around his neck twice, but also behind his hands were tangled in a cord like a prisoner.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Then I knew why I named him Carl.
Yeah, so your husband's cultural name...
Okay,
so that's the first experience, but I want us to go to, because even that in itself is spiritual.
Oh.
But I want us to go to focus on your second birth. Eh?
Yes.
When it happened, and start from the beginning and take us through.
So this other child was a girl. The first one was a boy, a girl. So it happens in 2016. 3 years after this other one. This one was 3 years when this one was born. 2016, November, I checked into the hospital on 19th so that the doctor could have my C-section on November 20th. We had been given an option of trying to push, but given the trauma of the first, even my other elders, like my mom said, but if the other situation of not getting enough centimeters happens again and the baby goes through the same stress, let's just eliminate that risk. Go for the scissor. You have 2 options. So we arranged for the scissor. So we reach hospital in the night. Labor was not supposed to be coming at that time because the doctor had tried to schedule at least a week before the real date of the EDD, expected date of delivery. But at midnight of that night, the labor begins disturbing, slowly by slowly, not so much pain, but pain I could sleep with. I actually slept the whole night. In the morning, very early, he comes in. They start prepping me for the surgery, give me everything I need, and then we go down. The theater was downstairs from where we had slept. We go down to the theater. As soon as we reach the theater, I collapse. And they're like, yeah, this one has feared too much on our Tidenyo theater. All the ladies were laughing and they think it's a joke.
So until first wait, you collapsed, but you could hear them laughing at you or what?
Yes, okay. At that point I could still hear them.
Okay, right.
I could hear them talking and they're like, eh. So they check me, they feel my pulse, put a pressure, that pressure thing, and they're like, eh, na yono mchala pressure, it's too low. So they were like, this pressure is not good. It's not good for an operation. It's not good. It's neither good for operation or no for delivery. So they were stuck with the patient. And then the doctor was somewhere doing some other things. They're like, we need to call that doctor now. His patient is strange. She's reacting very strangely. They put me on the operating table, started doing the things they do in such emergencies, turn me the other side, this side, check my feet, you know, try to look for better pressure in all ways. Apparently there are some positions which they enhance.
No, of course when what you're having is what they call hypotension, eh? The body survives on pressure blood being able to reach other places. So imagine the heart is supposed to pump to the brain uphill. So let's imagine the pressure reduces, because the pressure that comes through what we call the blood pressure comes from the force of the heart that is beating, and it is like transmitted through the blood vessels, eh? And that same force is able to
go to the brain,
to go to the brain and stuff like that. So just imagine you're standing or you were seated and then you collapse and you're hypotensive, eh? The organs that are far from the heart looking at how you understand, will be the ones that will suffer.
Yeah,
you understand. So what happens is there are positions we can put you in and use the advantage of gravity. For example, we will tilt you with the head down and the blood will, by reason of